Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning. It is Wednesday morning, the 27th of June, and the sun is rising. The tomb is empty. We talk about that every morning here, that is good news indeed. There really are two critical dimensions of the good news of Jesus. One is that our sins have been forgiven. Now is the time of Jubilee where all debts have been paid. But that wouldn't have the same kind of emphasis that it could have if Jesus was not raised. And the Bible talks about that often. But because he was raised, so too will be raised. And there's always hope and always future in his beautiful kingdom. This is Dr. Peter Kapsner with Faith Radio Mornings. I'm joined in studio by Logan Rausch, and also already joined in studio, he wandered in this morning, Bill English, regular guest of the show. Good morning, Bill.
You know, it's amazing who you let come in off the street here.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
we need a bouncer and a vetting process of some
kind
here.
You do.
Yeah,
you need a better security system.
Yeah,
that's all
yeah,
I'm
going to
say.
Socially awkward when you get in here like this. You're right, Logan?
Yeah, every week Peter just sends me out to the street to grab some guy, and it's always Bill. Wednesday he's standing in our parking lot.
That's
it is really weird.
I sleep in the parking lot on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, you do wander around. And we just think at least it takes some pity on you. Once a week we'll let you in, you know. So, Bill, we've been talking this morning, Logan and I, relative to this headline out of New York that there's a very young congresswoman potentially here coming, a Democratic socialist who is 28 years old, likely to be elected as the youngest congresswoman in history. And Logan and I have been just talking about bridging generational divides and what his perspective is at 22 on this versus me at 47. And are there some things that could unite us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to start putting things in reference to the age of Jurassic Park now. She's 3 years older than Jurassic Park, the original movie.
Oh, that makes me mad.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's totally, I mean, our opinions on this are so vastly different, not necessarily in where we land, but where our minds first go. I mean, you think about the first thing that comes to my mind is, wow, that's really impressive, and that's kind of cool. Someone definitely, especially my age, doesn't feel very represented when everybody in Congress is kind of using a walker to get around. So that's, in my mind, pretty cool.
And generally speaking, President Trump appeals to a different demographic. He usually skews a little bit older, not always, of course. But I'm curious, too, Logan, and you as well, Bill, one of our affiliates, Fargo, is going to be hosting a Trump rally tonight. And if you could get there, politics aside, just the historicity, the historical nature of this rally, would the two of you go if you were given the opportunity? Bill, let's start with you.
Yeah, I probably would go, whether it was President Obama or President Trump. I probably would go. I did go to a rally for Bush 43.
You did?
And saw him, actually shook his hand one time.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah, and I probably would go.
Yeah, Logan?
I think I'd go if it wasn't too much of a difficult situation to get into. I mean, I would love to know the energy that's in that room because you see it on the campaign trails and stuff, and it's so interesting. But, I mean, I had the opportunity to see Mike Pence when he came to a certain convention I was at, and it was like a six-hour wait in security to get in beforehand, and I just didn't have time for that.
Yeah, if you're in Fargo listening this morning, we would love to hear a bit tomorrow or Friday. If you wanted to call in and just give us a sense of what it was like to be there firsthand to welcome the president up there. It is 7 minutes past the hour. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, we will get into things with Bill English on the Bible and business and how these two realms that seem to be separate actually come together so well. So stay with us as Faith Radio Mornings. So, Bill, is that your walk-up music? We talked about this last week a little bit, the power of love, Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah, the power of love.
Yeah, yeah. So why this song for you?
Well, A, because I love the song.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yep.
But B, there's a phrase in it, and I'll have to get it for you next week,
right,
where what he talks about, the lyrics that he uses applies directly to business ownership.
Oh, I'd love to hear more
about
that.
So next week I'll bring those for you, and we'll talk about the song because I chose it precisely for that set of lyrics in the song.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's Bill English. You probably know the voice. He's been a regular contributor to the morning show for a very long period of time. Love to have you on talking about Bible and business. Your website is BibleandBusiness.com, and it brings together these two realms, business and Bible and our Christian faith, in some really important and beautiful ways. I know a lot of our listeners are either involved in business or business owners themselves. And what I would love for is just, you know, Bill, I love when you come on and bring an integrated perspective, that we don't have to check our faith at the door, even though sometimes it gets tricky in the realm of business.
It does, but I think our faith should drive what we do as business owners. And it should drive it in a way that is different than how most books look at it. So for a long time, I've been on a search to find articles or books that talk about the integration of faith and business ownership. And that content just doesn't exist out there.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the reason why I write the Bible in business. What are our stewardship responsibilities before the Lord as an owner? Is significantly different than as a leader or as an employee. And God holds us to a higher, I think, a higher standard and a higher level of accountability for what we do with that which he has entrusted to us.
Yeah, really well said. And I love on your website, you actually have 69 undeniable truths about business ownership.
Yeah.
And one of them that caught my attention this week that I would love for you to comment on is number 18 says, the more you integrate your faith into your business, the more Satan will oppose you. Talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, because business is ministry.
Okay.
It's part of the kingdom work. And just because it's for profit and not nonprofit doesn't mean that it's not part of kingdom work. And Satan doesn't really care where or how you try to move out for Jesus Christ. When you start to blaze for the Lord, Satan will oppose you. If you're blazing in the market square with a for-profit business, he's going to oppose you. And he's going to do things to try to undermine you. Maybe he'll send you a cute secretary and tempt you that way. Maybe he'll send lawsuits your directions. Maybe disgruntled employees will come after you. Maybe vendors will start to not work with you. There's lots of ways for Satan to oppose you. You need to understand that when you are really trying to use your business as a steward for the Lord, that Satan is going to come and oppose you. So if you're not well versed in spiritual warfare, you are a sitting duck because you will interpret spiritual problems as business problems.
Wow, such an important concept to just to think about. I remember hearing a sermon series at one point where the pastor was talking out of the book of Acts and noticing that as the followers of Jesus were moving out into the world, that they are always opposed. And he made this phrase that stuck with me for the last 30 years or so, which is that when the wind of the Spirit begins to blow, it'll always be met with the waves of resistance.
Yeah, a perfect phrase. And I think the pastor that said that spot on.
Yeah, I have another undeniable truth here too that in today's day and age may not be self-evident, and that is number 29, that profits are good. Yeah. Everywhere I go in the headlines is profits are what are the problem with our country. So say more about this, Bill.
You know, profits are good. Profits are a social good. Profits are an economic good. If they're used correctly, they can be a spiritual good. Profits are good, and profits are assumed in the scriptures. When you look at the parable of the talents in Luke 19, right? The master expects a return on his investment. So the idea of this growing and becoming and making more of what was is something that is affirmed in the scriptures. And so as Christians, we need to see profits as a good thing. How they are used is a stewardship issue, but the existence of profits in and of themselves is a good thing.
Well, it does go into one of the biblical principles as well about be fruitful and multiply. There is the idea of sort of everything needs to be multiplying out when it's working in its intended design, and profits not for greed, but for social good is an incredibly helpful part of business.
It is. Well, greed in any form is sin.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
Right? But profits used for good, either to invest and create more jobs, to give away philanthropy, to grow your people professionally. All those things are good things. By the way, on that last comment, we always want our people to leave our business better off than when they came, whether they know the Lord or not. That's part of being that social good. You want them to be better off when they leave than when they came.
And I can understand on some level the government requiring people to give away, but and I think that's helpful for businesses that might be greedy. But I find in business that those owners and the businesses themselves that come together and rally around a cause, around some sort of philanthropy, that they really own themselves and give the profits out of free will in those places is way more helpful for bringing an ownership to an outward-looking business as opposed to just all the profits.
Yeah, and nonprofits are going to manage that money infinitely better and more efficiently than the government will. So when the government forces you to give money away, and it's called redistribution of wealth through the tax system, that is a very inefficient way to do that. To my way of thinking, nonprofits are the better way to go.
And you just actually addressed some of this on your site. You wrote an article very recently. It wasn't one of the 69 undeniable truths, but it was you labeled it undeniable truths about taxes and subsidies. Can you kind of walk us through this article that you wrote?
You know, the Seattle City Council recently passed unanimously a $275 tax per head per employee for large employers who are domiciled in the city of Seattle.
Okay, so how much was it again?
$275.
Got it.
It was an annual tax. In less than 4 weeks, they repealed it.
So what was the rationale for the tax to begin with? And what did they realize and say 4 weeks later, oh, hang on a second, we screwed this up?
The rationale for the tax was to fund homeless shelters, the building of homeless shelter, because they have declared homelessness a crisis in Seattle. Okay, but when they passed this tax, Amazon and others balked. Right, mm-hmm. I mean, Amazon suspended building another building to house another 7,000 employees. Okay, now you got 7,000 jobs on the line. Is this really worth the $47 to $50 million that it was going to raise? So as a result, they repeal it, and that is an illustration of one of my core undeniable truths about taxes, and that is this: if you want to drive an economic activity away, tax it. Hmm. If you want to encourage an economic activity, subsidize it. And this is something that most politicians don't understand. Your 28-year-old from New York who is a socialist, I promise you she doesn't get this.
Great stuff from Bill English this morning. Love having you in studio. It's just about 17 minutes after the hour. In a moment, Bill, we'll talk a bit about family-run businesses and, mm-hmm. and some of the interesting complexities of being in that situation. It's Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes past the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined this Wednesday, as we almost always are, by Bill English, and BibleandBusiness.com is the website, bringing these two worlds together. I love, Bill, what you do, and maybe what our listeners don't know is you're actually leading a tour to Israel here.
I am.
You have about 24 people joining you ready, and spots are limited at this point, but tell us about the purpose of the trip.
Well, the purpose of the trip is to uncork how you read the Bible. So much of the Bible's interpretation rests on the geography.
Yep.
If you understand the geography, you can begin to really understand the meaning of what the authors are trying to get to. So going over there, being there, walking where Jesus walked, seeing the things that Abraham saw, you know, the spice routes and Galilee and all that, you know, it's just an amazing experience.
It really is. And Logan, we were talking at the break that you haven't been to Israel, but you have, in your words, you took a VR tour of it. I was just so happy with myself that VR stands for virtual reality, right? So how did you just put on some goggles and you're suddenly in Israel?
Yeah, it was at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. They had this big booth set up, and you could put on this headset that essentially allowed you to walk around and just view all of Israel, and just flashed you from different places and different locations. And I thought I was going to get hit by a bus at one point. It was very realistic.
That's great. Well, so it's a good starting point. And Bill, if people want to join you on the trip, and I don't think you're going to get hit by any kind of moving objects or transportations.
We'll try not to.
Yeah, exactly. You're a better tour guide than that. Where can they find more information about the trip?
Actually, they just need to email me.
Right. Okay, so give us the email
again.
It's
bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
And your contact information is on the website, I assume, as well, right?
Yeah, my cell phone number's out there, which is probably dangerous.
But, it'll blow up this morning, Bill. I love it.
But yeah, I'd love to have some more people come.
Great. Well, in our remaining time, let's kind of shift the conversation over to family business. And
right.
you've sent me a series of articles. Just family business can be really good. It can be really tricky. And one of the trickier dimensions is when it comes to passing on wealth generationally. how that happens in my families, because kids can really end up fighting over the family wealth, right?
Yeah, passing on the wealth requires the parents to be very clear about their values and how they're going to pass on this wealth. So you might have, let's say you have four children and two work in the business and two don't. The two that work in the business might feel entitled to the whole business because I'm the one who's been working here. Johnny and Susie haven't been working here. And so that sense of entitlement may cause a rift between the siblings. Probably would, actually, especially if the business is highly profitable and pretty large. And yet I think what the parents need to do is to say, wait a minute, the business is only one part of our overall wealth picture, so to speak. We have a house, maybe we have a cabin, something like that. And we're going to divide this up equally among the four of you. And that's what we always recommend, is equality here when you're passing things on. How does the business get passed on in a way that it keeps going, you keep the jobs preserved, and yet you're four to all four siblings? That's a major topic of discussion.
And what is the role of the existing business owner before passing it on, really educating the children to say, hey, look, this is not a money grab for all of you. This is not wait until I die so that you can be set up for your whole lifetime. How would an existing business owner help educate their children to really use wealth appropriately, and it's not just for them?
Yeah, first of all, I think two things among others, but two core things that the first generation must do. And number one is to prepare the second generation for leadership in the business and in a much more complex ownership structure. Usually you have a sole proprietor or a person who owns 100% of the stock, passing that on to three or four or five siblings who now are going to have shared ownership in that thing. That is a complexity that most first-generation people just don't really appreciate. And so you got to prepare the second generation for ownership as well as leadership. The second thing that they have to do is pass on their values. Mm. How do you bake your values into the family and into the business such that the values tend to be cohesive rather than dispersive, in other words, divisive?
Yeah.
Right?
And I find first-generation organizations tend to have this vision for the future, to just keep things spreading out towards the future. But by the time, and there's been studies done on this organizationally, that second generation at best maybe maintains it. And by the third generation, it dies out. And so talk about the importance of always focusing towards the future generationally.
Yeah, and focusing towards the future, the way you avoid that scenario, which is so common, is that you get a board of directors with outsiders, and that the kids can never be like their parents in terms of just absolute autonomy and authority. They have to be answering to each other and answering to a board. The reality is the second generation does best when there is mutual accountability between the siblings and there is legal accountability to a board of directors, and the board of directors has at least half outsiders on it.
And you've been in businesses both big and small,
though,
obviously, and family businesses tend to be of the smaller kind. Can you speak a bit about how in existing business situations, the family can stay focused first on their relationships and second on the business? Because I'm guessing many families get broken up over the business, right?
They do. We just had an article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal about Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, suing his children because he thinks they're taking his business from him.
Right.
So, these things can really fly apart. The value that the first generation needs to have in order to keep this thing going into the second and third generations is that they need to understand they are raising a family first and a business second. Are you in this family because you're part of the family, or are you in this family because you're part of the business? And so I really highly recommend the first generation people, as they're raising their kids, they need to understand that they're first of all raising a family. And they're not just raising a family or members who are going to work in a business. It's a huge differentiator.
Oh, and I mean, do we have any lessons from the prodigal son on this situation, right, where the older brother stays behind kind of running the family farm while one of the younger son says, I want the wealth now and I'm going to go squander it on parasailing or whatever he did back then? I mean, do we have any lessons from this?
Did they have parasailing in the New
Testament? Well, I think it's in the Living Bible translation, Bill. I mean, it's one of, I try to read multiple translations on these things to come to an understanding.
Okay, I thought that was in the Kastner translation.
Well, yeah, it might be there too. Get confused.
I've read that version. It's not good.
It's not okay. Yeah, we better stick with like the NIV at this point.
All right. The prodigal son speaks more to the fact that you just let your kids go if they're really hell-bent on going into sin. And you love them along the way. You speak to them. I imagine the dad and the son, you know, spoke to him, said, don't do this, don't do this. Okay, here's your wealth. And hopefully it's like the Romans 2 thing, right? God lets people descend into depravity, hopefully so that the kindness of God leads them back to repentance, right? The kindness of the prodigal or the kindness of the father brought the prodigal back. It's the brother, actually, who I have a real problem with.
Yeah, say more about that.
Well, the brother says, "Wait, why are you bringing him back? He should be a servant now," and that's the lack of forgiveness for somebody who has wronged us. The dad could forgive the son, the brother couldn't. I think that's instructive for us.
Yeah, it's another great example of how the kingdom of God, Bible, and business can all kind of work together in these principles of the family.
It does. If you're a Christian business owner, you have a stewardship responsibility before the Lord and a stewardship opportunity to further the kingdom with your business. I have lots of stuff out of Bible and Business that will help you with that, or you can just contact me directly and I'll talk.
Bill, the time goes way too fast in these mornings. I love having you here. Again, your website is BibleandBusiness.com. It's an excellent resource for people in business, people in all walks of life, to understand how our quote-unquote secular vocations, the way we think of them, actually are not that, that all of life is this beautiful Christian vocation.
Right. Thank you very much. Yeah, I love doing the website, and I love serving the Lord.
Great. Thanks for being with us, Bill. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and get ready for a second half of our hour. You know, Logan, we've had two great unintentional puns this morning. We've been talking about you and I trying to figure out how we can bridge our generational gap. And so we talked about the common ground of coffee. We didn't even know we did it. And now Bill English, one of our favorites here, talks about Buzz Aldrin's family flying apart. I mean, the intelligence level here that we're even unaware of is fascinating.
I know a big group of my family is trying to convince me that punning is a sin. I will not accept that.
I love that. Let's take a break for news. We'll come back with Bruce Ashford for the second half of this hour. Speaker and author Lisa Bevere is now with us talking about freedom and forgiveness and the difficulty that we can often have to forgive others.
I always kind of thought that when I would forgive my husband, I would not just be angry about the one incident, but that incident and everything that reminded me of that incident, I would bring it to the table. I would sandbag him. I would be like, this is all of these things. I'm forgiving you of all of this. This is all the mean things you've done to me. And I'd like throw it out on the table and cash it in. When God told me to behave supernaturally, he did not let me do that. He did not let me say, okay, I'm going to itemize all of your offenses, and I'm going to let you know exactly what I'm forgiving. I actually just looked at my husband, and I said, I believe you want to change, and I forgive you. And it was so hard to shut my mouth and not say a lot more, but that's what I did. And I was disappointed because I had some really great things I wanted to put on the table that I had never brought up in a fight, and I had to let them go. So let it go and let yourself have a future and just forgive. You will never regret loving someone well or forgiving them. You will regret every mean word. You will regret unforgiveness, but you will never regret releasing people.
That's speaker and author Lisa Bevere. If you want to catch that entire segment, go to myfaithradio.com and search for Freedom and Forgiveness. It's a great segment. We'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Captain Bruce Ashford, regular contributor to the show.
Like you, I know many families who've experienced divorce and remarriage. I know kids who've been adopted. And I know kids who are still healing from a splintered relationship with mom or dad. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you have a blended family or perhaps one of your kids is adopted, it's important to remember that people don't heal overnight. A relational upheaval will create some scars on a child's heart that can't be ignored. It doesn't mean that blended families or adopted kids aren't a gift from God. They just take special care. Regardless of how good things are, your child may experience grief because of a lost relationship. Remember that God is grafting together a new and beautiful family right now. but healing takes time.
Check out the articles, books, and parenting tips from Mark Gregston, available online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's 20 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and just delighted to be joined right now by Dr. Bruce Ashford, who is provost and professor of theology at Southeastern Baptist. And Bruce, last week when you were on, we were talking about the Trump Space Force, and you labeled yourself Captain Bruce Ashford. Are you kind of living into this name now, Bruce?
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure how to respond, but I love the intro. I was listening to the show a minute ago when you called me Captain Ashford. I thought, listen, this Dr. Kapsner, he is sharp.
That sure might be the first time anybody's ever said that. I just feel really just warm and fuzzy inside, Bruce.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's Love Faith Radio.
Oh, it's great. So I would love to start. You released a book earlier this month called Letters to an American Christian. Bruce, it's available on Amazon. I can't recommend more highly picking this book up in an age where we have so often fused our Christianity with politics, and yet we're starting to see the problems with that idea. And you're outlining something different in this book. Talk us through some of the premises of the book.
Yeah, so in the book, what we're basically arguing is that Christians need, more than ever, we need to draw upon the rich resources of the Christian faith to help shape our approach to politics and public life. And so we're saying several things. Number one, you can't separate religion and politics because all people are religious. We all worship something. It might be sex or money or power. It might be Jesus. So we can't separate religion and politics, but there are good and bad ways of bringing religion into politics. And we've seen some bad ways, right? I mean, we've seen some Christians behave very badly in the public square. We've seen Christians twist scripture and biblical principles. And so in this book, 26 brief chapters, or 27, I forget. who am I? Where
right,
am I?
Right.
Very brief chapters that will equip your college student or your neighbor, your church member, or equip you to address really any of the hot-button issues with the truth content of the Christian faith, and also hopefully persuasively, right, with wit and warmth and persuasion rather than with kind of a wild-eyed and angry sort of attack mode.
Yeah,
so that's the point of the book, and I hope it'll be a fun read for people.
Well, I think it'd be incredibly helpful, and obviously you write on BruceAshford.net about Christianity for the common good. This is really your perspective, and I could see this being a book that empowers parents as well to talk about this with their kids and be able to say, hey, look, Christianity isn't inherently conservative politically or liberal politically. There, really, you can find it in both sides of the spectrum. We need to think first about our faith before we think about our political stance.
Yeah, absolutely. Christian first and foremost, Democrat or Republican second. It's a great way to put it. We have to make absolutely – I don't think it's wrong at all to be involved with a major political party. We can, and sometimes we absolutely should. But we have to. What we have to do is to be very clear, to find ways to show that our ultimate allegiance is to Christ and that our other allegiances are tentative and secondary. And if we don't do that, we are going to allow ourselves to be categorized and dismissed. And that's what we don't – we don't want to be categorized primarily in a political manner and then therefore dismissed. We want to be able to break their ability to classify us and dismiss us. We want to make Christianity interesting again.
The book is Letters to an American Christian. Again, it's all over the internet. You can buy it in different places, paperback and Kindle audiobook. Really recommend picking it up as a way to inform our faith and politics. Now, Bruce, you regularly contribute to major news organizations as well, and you are going to be releasing an article soon that's getting into what I hadn't frankly heard of until just very recently with your article, and that was a pretty big case around the abortion conversation and free speech. It was out in California. Is that correct?
Yeah, so this was a big case. I wrote an article back in March, and then I'll have an article going up with Fox News Opinion sometime this morning. They tell me exactly what time, but sometime this morning. And basically, here's what happened. In California, the California court, I mean, not a shocker, I think, for any of us, that the California's court decided they would require all pregnancy support centers, all of them are Christian, almost all of them are Christian.
Interesting.
That they would require them to advertise government-funded abortions in their pregnancy support centers, right? So And during the oral arguments, it was really interesting that California's Deputy Solicitor General was pressed on what would happen if a pregnancy support center wanted to take out a two-word billboard that says "Choose Life." And Deputy Klein said that if they did that, they would also have to put in large font, and I'm going to quote it to you, "California has public programs that provide immediate, free, or low-cost access to comprehensive family planning services, including FDA-approved methods of contraception, prenatal care, and abortion for eligible women. To determine whether you qualify, contact the county social services at," and then the phone number.
That is a huge billboard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they wanted a billboard with two words, "Choose Life."
Right.
But they were going to then have to add 78 or 80 words to it.
Wow.
So this is a, you know, violation of free speech, I think, that pregnancy support centers should be free to speak against abortion and to not be forced to speak in its favor. But in addition to the free speech victory, which is an important one, in the article, what I do is I pose a couple of questions, questions that I think that folks on the left and a few folks on the right pose, and that is, why do you Christians care so much about this issue? Why do you let it be such a core part of your belief system? And then I try to answer from a Christian perspective why we care. Then after that, I ask this question, but what about people who are not evangelical or Catholic? Why should they care? And then I give sociological rationale. I actually give 7 or 8 sociological reasons that abortion is deeply harmful for society. We can get into those if you're interested in doing that.
Yeah, I'd love to, Bruce. I was just thinking that we could take a short break right now a little earlier so that we'd have more time after the break to get into the arguments that abortion is just, it's tough for society at large. You don't even have to have a religious faith to see that. And I would love to get into that more with you. So we are talking with Captain Bruce Ashford this morning, 47 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break and come back with more of the abortion conversation. Bruce, we don't know if that one's going to work, but that's a Captain America introduction at this point. You know, there's something about this. You and I each have a doctorate, I know, but you can buy doctorates on the internet these days, it feels like. To be captain really says something. I mean, I want to be a captain, but you're the captain here, Bruce.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you let us know that you bought your doctorate on the internet. I didn't know that about you. Fascinating. And I'm sorry I don't have a great response. I was on the phone with the Space Force talking through some logistical issues.
Well, I really appreciate taking another 6 minutes away before you head out to the stars again, Bruce, and that's it. Before the break, we are getting into what I think you're outlining beautifully in this fascinating abortion conversation and the case out in California. And you were suggesting that this isn't just even a religious issue, though it clearly is that. But we're talking about societal benefits, whether you're atheist, humanist, or any religious persuasion, that really you can make a case that abortion is not great for society.
Yeah, that's right. And so what I want to say to everyone out there in radio land, you know, as Christians, we've got a couple of different types of persuasion that we can use when we're talking with folks about public issues. One is to use specifically Christian reasoning. And on the abortion issue, what we can do is we can talk about humans being created in the image and likeness of God. We can say that in Psalm 139, we're told that God knows an unborn being intimately and individually just like an adult. In Luke 1:41, we realize that God consecrated a baby for special service even when he was in the womb. We can talk about Christ shedding his blood to save all beings from their sins who will receive him. So these are Christian types of reasoning, and the advantage of that type of reasoning is we get to put all of our cards on the table.
Hmm.
But there's another type of reasoning that's more neutral, where we're trying to find common ground. And on the abortion issue, and as I mentioned in my book, Letters to an American Christian, let me mention several different ways that abortion harms society. One, and we've talked about this on the show before, it hurts the baby. I mean, I know that's an obvious one, but it's agonizing. It's awful.
Is. Yep.
And we just saw a partial birth abortion where a baby lived through it and is going to have horrible scarring and so forth. An unborn child in America today enjoys less legal protection than an endangered species of fish.
Wow. And what's so troubling, I mean, and we're seeing that as technology advances, that attitudes are thankfully beginning to change a little bit, where second and third trimester abortions are, the vast majority of the public is against them. But there's almost this inconsistency where there still is support for first trimester. And that seems to be an inconsistent view of human life.
It is inconsistent. And one of the things you'll notice is the linguistic camouflage that is used, these socially neutral euphemisms such as, instead of calling it a baby, we call it the products of conception. And instead of calling it a termination of life or a killing, we call it a termination of a pregnancy. And so that just reveals, I think, the conscience that we know we're doing something wrong, and so we change the language we use. The second thing is abortion hurts women. Pro-choice people tend to pose as being pro-women, but abortion damages women. Teaches them that it's morally and legally okay to use lethal violence against their baby. It encourages male irresponsibility and sexually predatory behavior, which in turn destabilizes relationships and marriages, which in turn makes people want to have more abortions. Abortion hurts men. You realize there are a number of fathers who have to watch their child killed against their will because in our country the father has no say in what happens to his baby. Or for a father to find out, you know, 2 decades later that the child they would have wanted to nurture was killed without their input or consent. So it hurts women, it hurts men, hurts marriages and families, I think, you know, for obvious reasons. It undermines justice and equality. Let's underscore this. I think we've talked about it on the show before. In the 60s, with the Civil Rights Movement, it looked like America had finally said, listen, it is not okay to take an entire class of human beings, blacks, and say that they don't get the justice and equality everybody else gets. But then within a few years, in 1973, we said, hey, guess what? There's another entire class of human beings, unborn ones, and for them, there will not be justice and there will not be equality. So very, very ironic, very sad. The most vulnerable and weak among us have the least protection.
Well, and I think what's troubling too, Bruce, is obviously women have been treated historically very poorly in our country on a number of levels. We're still dealing with income gaps for women doing the same job as men, and women have been objectified in the pornography industry. There's this terrible treatment of women, and so there's a need to remedy that. But sometimes the remedies that we come up with they create more ill. And in this case, when the abortion rights got fused with women's rights, these are two separate conversations, but they were brought together.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, there were even some good intentions by many of the folks who, as you're saying, promoted kind of the pro-choice view to help women be able to, you know, compete in the workplace or not to be burdened. But in the end, the medicine has become a poison. Politically, abortion undermines our nation's system of checks and balances. Roe v. Wade was an instance in which the Supreme Court stole from the legislature the ability to pass, you know, to make a pronouncement on a moral issue. They used the living document view of the Constitution by which they can insert something into the Constitution that doesn't actually exist, and that's what they did. Found a right to privacy and a right to abortion where one didn't exist. Abortion minimizes society's mediating institutions. So for everyone out there listening, a mediating institution, you know, there are so many mediating institutions in America. It's mediating because it mediates between the huge government above us and the isolated individual beneath us. Mediating institutions are things like families, churches, businesses, and so forth. And once again, the only person who has any say in an abortion is the solitary woman stranded out there on her own and the overweening government suspended above her who's paying for the abortion. And the father, the family, has no say.
Yeah, it's just fascinating, the dynamics, and I think we see the headlines, but we don't always understand the mechanics of them. Bruce, unfortunately, we're out of time at this point, but your book is Letters to an American Christian. I know you outlined some of this in your book. I can't recommend it highly enough, and we really appreciate your time each week on the show.
Thanks. It's great to be on the show. I'll be out with the Space Force, you know, for the next day or so, but hopefully can come back on the show soon.
We're going to get Chris Evans in studio with you next week. We'll have two captains in here all at the same time. I can't wait, Bruce.
All right, great. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, have a good morning. It's 3 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show.
As we wrap up Faith Radio Mornings this morning with Dr. Peter Kapsner, Paul Perreault, and myself, Logan Rausch, I got to say, Peter, I'm concerned about the fake doctorates you're handing out, assigning the rank of captain with no authority. What are you doing here?
I really did put my cards on the table this morning, unfortunately. And Bill Arnold in the morning show, he used to always wrinkle his nose like Mary Poppins anytime I brought up anything doctorate related, because he couldn't believe somebody like me could actually have something like that. Great morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Looking forward to being with you again tomorrow. The tomb is empty. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.